my goal over the summer would be, as much as I love being home and a little break with the family, we're pushing forward an alternative proposal.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, and on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we catch up with New York Congressman Pat Ryan, a Democrat from the 18th District. While Congress is going home for the summer amid questions about the Epstein files, it comes soon after President Trump signed his domestic agenda package, the Big Beautiful Bill. I talked about that and much more with New York Congressman Pat Ryan, a Democrat from the 18th District.
Thanks for having me.
So, I was going to ask you about your summer recess plans. And as we speak, it seems like summer recess for the House is going to happen sooner than expected. What's the latest?
Yeah, we just heard an hour or two ago that the internal chaos and division on the Republican side, who are nominally in charge of running the House of Representatives, has reached such a level around the Epstein stuff that they're going to shut down the House floor early, is the word on the street, because there are so many House Republicans that I think wisely don't want to take a vote against releasing the Epstein files. So they're just not going to take votes.
Isn't this a reversal by the House Speaker? I mean, a week ago he said that they should be released.
Yeah, I mean, the hypocrisy in all directions from Republicans, including, of course, and most importantly, the president, is just incredible here. And that's saying something given on a lot of issues, their hypocrisy. But I've gotten a ton of calls, and not in a partisan way, from people saying, hey, we really actually want to see the disclosure here. We want transparency here. So hopefully we get to that point. But they are so afraid of releasing whatever's in these files that they're literally going to shut down the House early. And that's just irresponsible given what needs to be done to serve the public.
Well, won't the question still be there when you all come back after Labor Day?
Absolutely. It'll be there. And I think it'll be, the focus will be even more intent. I'm actually one of, at least as of this morning, seven Democrats co-sponsoring the bipartisan resolution to force the disclosure of the files. It's House Resolution 581, which we're going to force what's called the discharge petition, meaning we'll go around the speaker if needed and force the entire House to vote on and get everybody on the record. So this certainly is not going away, and I'm proud to be one of the original co-sponsors of that.
Well, I'm not much of a conspiracy guy, but what do you think is in these files? I mean, now this has taken on a life of its own.
Yeah, I'm not either, and I certainly don't have any inside information. But one, I think generally where there's smoke, there's fire. Clearly, there's an awful lot of smoke here. And I think it's pretty obvious given the widely reported, credible reporting on President Trump's affiliation with Mr. Epstein that he's probably all over those files in a lot of different ways. And to be clear, there's probably lots of rich and powerful and elite people in those files, and I think they should all be disclosed regardless of, certainly partisanship or anything else. I mean, this really strikes at the heart of, I think for a lot of Americans, a growing frustration that the wealthy and well-connected people get away with whatever they want while all of us are struggling, and that's why I think this is so resonant with so many Americans.
Isn't it also, just to look at it in a linear fashion, they more or less ran last campaign saying that the documents would be released. The FBI director and the AG, who were picked by President Trump, said that they would release the documents. And then suddenly they said, oh, there's nothing to see here. And President Trump said, move on. So, it's almost an own goal to a degree, even if President Trump is not ultimately implicated.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I'll be clear, this was not one of my top policy priorities. I don't think most voters that, voted in my district anyway, had this number one on their list. But at the same time, it was an explicit promise made, now an explicit promise broken. And it gets at the heart of, I think, that larger concern about the rich and powerful. So it's certainly an own goal. And And it's really the first time that I've seen, the Republicans in the House have been so, I think, pathetically and weakly just lockstep behind Trump on everything. And this is the first time they've shown even an ounce of backbone. I mean, the resolution I mentioned that I'm a co-sponsor of now has over 10 Republicans on it, and that's enough to force a vote when we come back in September.
So you were a moment ago, you were rueful about Congress leaving early for the summer. So what was on your list? What are some priorities that you think are going to be neglected with the early dismissal?
Well, I mean, one, we still have a lot of work to do to try to blunt a lot of the cuts and harm that were just passed in this, they call it beautiful, but I would say ugly bill and really a betrayal in terms of cutting $1 trillion in health care from about 1 in 3 folks in my district, adding almost $4 trillion to the debt. I think the latest number is actually 3.5 that just came out this morning, as well as advancing a tax code that really favors the 1%, gives $1 trillion in tax relief to the top 1% of the wealthiest people in the country. So my goal over the summer would be, as much as I love being home and a little break with the family, we're pushing forward an alternative proposal to take that $1 trillion in tax cuts to the rich and actually pass it on to the middle class and the working class. And we're pushing a proposal to roll back the adding of $4 trillion to our national debt when I think we all agree we can't add to that. So that's the work that I think we should be focused on before letting anybody go.
So what is your understanding of how specifically the package will affect the 18th district? I mean, we've been hearing from members about the impacts to health care, to what it will mean for more uninsured people, a coming food nutrition cliff. What does it look like in New York 18?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a pretty bleak picture. And I did a town hall last week and had over 12,000 constituents call in and heard some really, really sad and infuriating, and I think, frankly, un-American stories. So the numbers are striking. I mean, 200,000 plus folks in my district, which is about 800,000 people, get their health insurance from Medicaid. That's kids. About half of them are kids, over 100,000. Seniors in assisted living, and folks with disabilities and many others. So those health care cuts affect those folks on Medicaid, but also affect our hospitals. I mean, our rural hospitals and even Garnet Health, our biggest system in Middletown and Orange County, already had to do some closures based on these Medicaid cuts. So significant health care impact that will affect everybody, regardless of whether you're on Medicaid or private insurance. The second piece is, I mean, the tax component here is really fundamentally favors the rich, where, as I said, the top 1% get $1 trillion in savings. There are folks that will get a little bit of help, so I want to be clear about that. I mean, I do support the component on removing tax on tips and overtime, which I think helps folks that are working hard. But the lion's share of the benefit on the tax side of this goes to the rich, and no knock on them, but they don't need more help. And then the final piece here, yeah, and that, you know, we should celebrate success, but those that have should contribute to helping others, I believe. So that's going to affect everybody in the district. And then the debt. I mean, imagine if each of us, if you average out across the American people what $4 trillion in debt means, that's $12,000 per American of additional debt that we're taking on. That means your tax dollars are just going down to pay down that debt, not to provide benefits or help to, you know, folks or to fund important priorities. So all the pieces of this bill, which I really do think are a betrayal of core campaign promises from the president and a personal betrayal of most of my constituents, it's really going to affect folks in the district. Just the last quick thing, I didn't mention the, sure, the food component here. Tens of thousands of folks in the district also count on nutritional assistance through SNAP, as well as our farmers that produce that food will be affected. And we're very concerned this could affect free school lunch and breakfast, which we've worked so hard in New York to just get passed to support everybody in the state. And this will dramatically cut funding to that.
Were you surprised that the bill made it through the Senate as relatively easily as it did?
I mean, the fact that folks are so flagrantly harming their own constituents, I still have trouble really comprehending until you look at the fact that it really was just driven by blind loyalty and fealty almost to Trump, who jammed this through. And again, I think that's just a disservice to our responsibility as representatives, regardless of party, to vote to harm so many of your constituents. So I was surprised. And there were a few Republicans in the Senate who did speak up, by the way, and vote against it and say these Medicaid cuts in particular will harm my folks, and they voted against it. But it was sort of not enough, too little, day late and a dollar short, I guess you could say, on those folks standing up to try to stop this.
So after that, quote, big, beautiful bill that President Trump signed on July 4th, there was this package of cuts, the rescission request from the White House, which targeted us here in public media, but also foreign aid. And that was, you know, another round of close votes, but ultimately successful ones for the GOP. What was your take on that package?
Yeah, and I think it's an important point you made of how close these votes are. So all the components of the big ugly betrayal, as I have called it, passed by two votes in the House of Representatives. Just two votes decided that. Same thing on this rescissions package. And rescissions is just a fancy word for cuts. And these cuts were things like, as you mentioned, public radio, which you know, I am, and I know you are, a big fan of as a critical way to inform the public. PBS, which, you know, you want to piss off a dad and parents. You cut Sesame Street funding to my kids that watch that every morning and millions of other kids. That just goes against, I think, who we are as a country, not to mention foreign aid that feeds literally millions of starving people around the world. It's been a beacon of American values and showing why we're a special country in supporting human rights and advancing ending efforts to end starvation and stop HIV and AIDS. So these are just, I think, things that just are not supported by the broad public.
So let me follow up with a political question, because I know you've been thinking hard about this since last November. And that is, if the Democrats had the majority in the House after the next midterms, I mean, what would be the platform and what would your party be doing differently right now?
And this is so important. We have to be clear what we're against. And clearly, these kind of cuts to health care, to food assistance, to basic needs that folks count on, as well as the tax components that we talked about in the debt that I am against, and I think the vast majority of the American people are against. We have to be clear what we're against, but we also have to be clear what we're for. So myself and others, we've been working to exactly outline that. For example, not good enough to just say we're going to protect Medicaid, which is a critical program, but we're going to strengthen the program. We're going to get more Americans covered with health care between Medicaid and Medicare. We're going to work to lower the costs and extend, for example, the tax credits of the Affordable Care Act that help tens of millions of Americans lower their health care costs. So we're not only looking to preserve these programs, but to make them better, stronger, and more effective, and to get health care to more people. On the tax component specifically, there are multiple bills, and I'm co-sponsor of several, that really are about advancing a truly fair, and I would say American tax code that rewards work, not wealth. And so that's about middle-class tax cuts instead of tax cuts for the rich. So those are some of the things at the broad national level that we're focused on. I think the other piece that I've been very focused on is anti-corruption efforts. Specifically, I'm co-sponsor of a package of bills focused on banning stock trading by members of Congress, which it's ridiculous that you should be able to get rich while you're serving the public in this job. A lifetime ban on lobbying for members of Congress. You shouldn't go to Congress to then go set up your career lobbying afterwards. I support term limits and other things like that to help clean up what is widely viewed and not wrongly as a corrupt system here in D.C.
You're also a part of this first Democratic Veterans Caucus, which just launched in June. So what's the goal and what's your remit in the caucus?
Yeah, I'm really proud of this. We've never had a Democratic Veterans Caucus, and there's a lot of issues coming up, especially in the Trump administration, where veterans are being hurt, and military families as well. Cuts to the VA, including our own VA in the Hudson Valley at Castle Point, where I get care, where they closed 20 inpatient beds. We've seen nationally tens of thousands of cuts to the workforce at the VA at a time when I think we can all agree we should be doing more to support our veterans. There are just very concerning cuts proposed to veteran housing and veteran supportive housing that we've spoken out about in the latest proposed budget from Trump that's separate from the big ugly bill that just passed. So the purpose of the caucus is to help make sure there's a voice for veterans here in Congress when increasingly the Republicans, even my military veteran colleagues, are just so blindly behind Trump's agenda that they're not stopping to ask, does this actually help or hurt veterans? So we felt it was important to speak up on those issues on behalf of all American veterans.
Do you see a way that your party can do better with members of the service and veterans of the service?
In terms of the electorally, you mean?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, yeah, I think as you see today's Republican Party abandoning a lot of the values of selfless service, of supporting our allies abroad, of actually funding proper care and benefits to our veterans, as the modern-day GOP, the sort of MAGA GOP, abandons that group, I think I'm pushing for the Democratic Party to lean in and be the party that doesn't just say the words, but actually follows through on supporting veterans, supporting military families. So as we do that, I think people are noticing that. And we already saw significant swings away from the Republicans after Trump's first term when there were massive cuts to the VA. And he did call troops suckers and losers, and he did insult John McCain. And he continues to politicize our military in a way that's very un-American and concerning.
Let me move to some local issues. You had a rally the other day against this decision by the MTA to discontinue the Newburgh Beacon Ferry, which the MTA chalked up to underuse. And you wrote a letter to the MTA president. Are you getting anywhere with restoration?
Yeah, we haven't gotten an official response from the MTA, which sadly is not surprising. But this is a really important fight, and it's illustrative. There's some big, obviously, national battles playing out that we were just talking about. But at the local level, the communities of Newburgh and Beacon, and specifically in the entire Hudson Valley, are growing and expanding. We're seeing new residents and more housing built and more jobs and new businesses being started. And so the ferry, as a connector both for commuters but also for our economy between the thriving communities of Newburgh and Beacon, is really important to continue to build that momentum. And so to see the MTA cut this out, it just flies in the face of common sense of folks on the ground. And so we organized a big, actually I didn't organize it, I attended it. Community leaders organized it, and we've had a real grassroots effort to push back. And so there's a big public hearing coming up later this month of the MTA where we're gonna make sure the community hears our voice. I recorded a little selfie video at our rally with a few hundred people standing behind me saying this fight is not going away. And so we're gonna press on this point.
I want to ask you about immigration, which we haven't talked about in today's conversation, but has obviously been a defining issue of this first half of the year of President Trump's return to the White House. A 23-year-old was actually rounded up by ICE the other day in your district, Herson Tercios, and that's led to a lot of community outcry. What's your latest understanding of that situation, and then put it into a larger context for us?
Yeah, I might slightly do that in reverse, if you don't mind.
Please.
We've seen, President Trump, I think, rightly focused on the idea of violent criminals not being able to walk freely on our streets. I think that's something 90%+ of Americans support, whatever their sort of immigration status is. That's something we all support. The infuriating part, and I think the fundamentally unconstitutional part, is that is not what the Trump administration has focused on. They've not focused on violent criminals. They're rounding up beloved small business owners, young people, older people, people that have been here for decades serving the community, embedded in our community. And that fundamentally flies in the face of what America is and what our values are. And so the latest, and this is ramped up in the Hudson Valley. In the last 3-4 weeks, we've seen a significant increase in ICE activity. My team and myself have been very focused on tracking this, working with individuals and families affected. And this latest case that you mentioned, Herson, who was rounded up on Friday night in front of a bunch of kids, by the way, right in front of a daycare center, which is just horrific, that young people had to, kids had to watch this, rounded up with no transparency, no information, and the whole community has rightly rallied, and we are pushing back against this. There's a hearing coming up tomorrow, Wednesday morning. We were able to get a court to weigh in and say he can't be removed without without due process, and so that habeas corpus petition is playing out, and we're hopeful that the judge will do the right thing.
I have to imagine that you have a lot of people in your district, constituents, who are, you know, fearful about going about their everyday life. You know, in a lot of cases, these are people who have been here for quite a while, and they've got, you know, businesses, or they're in school, or whatever, and they don't know when that shoe may drop on them.
Yeah, it's tragic, and I think, again, it's just not what the American public wants and goes against our values. Herson's case is a perfect example. Young man who graduated from Rhinebeck High School, beloved by his teachers and classmates and the community, earned multiple scholarships upon high school graduation. There's actually a busload of his own high school classmates that chartered a bus to go down to the hearing tomorrow morning to support him. We've had letters of support coming in to the judge. I'm writing a letter of support to outline how much he's given back in service to the community. And so those stories are amplified across the district and across the country, and it's just an aggressive overreach that, once again, it's a broken promise from this administration. It's even worse, frankly, than what happened in the first Trump administration. What encourages me, though, is, especially in this case, the Rhinebeck community has really powerfully rallied, and it's the voices of his classmates and folks who, you know, he started his own lawn care business. He's an entrepreneur, a successful one. His clients are rallying, his classmates are rallying, and that gives me a lot of optimism about the country and the American people that we're going to speak up on these things.
Congressman Ryan, let me switch gears and ask you about some politics before we go. You know, actually, I found this very refreshing. A lot of your colleagues in New York State Democratic politics have, sort of taken a wait and see approach about the New York City mayoral election and the result of the June primary. But the other day you were asked about the outcome, and you said you thought that former Governor Cuomo should, stop running and go away. What made you say that?
Yeah, I think I said he should go away and never be in a position of public trust again. And I don't say things like that lightly. I mean, I think there's a well-documented record of his violation of the public trust. For me, it's actually very much goes back to my previous role as county executive, where during COVID, the handling of our seniors in our community and the failure to protect them during COVID for political expediency's sake was, to me, an unforgivable thing. I could name individuals that I know, seniors in our community, at our nursing homes, that lost their life because of his failures. And someone like that, who's unwilling to take accountability for that, and in fact, I think lied about it and tried to cover it up, should not be in a position of public trust. And that's just one of a host of issues, not to mention his well-documented sexual harassment issues. And so, frankly, the fact that anybody in my party would support someone like that for position of public trust, I just, and then we wonder why, the party's not popular. It flies in the face of common sense.
Well, this might be dime store analysis, but I mean, he seemed to have a head of steam or a lot of support in his comeback bid. And it appears to me that a lot of members and some unions, too, made a calculation that they should get on board when they could still get something for it, or they made the endorsement because they thought he was going to win. And then that hasn't worked out so far. And in the meantime, you know, some of the more conservative elements of your party are worried about Mamdani's, you know, progressive platform. And, you know, he might be a firebrand sort of figure and attract undue attention from the Trump administration, who is always looking for someone to fight with. So what do you think? Do you endorse Mamdani's candidacy? And is he a good figure for the Democratic Party right now?
I mean, his campaign, as I understand it, it's not in my district, so I didn't follow it as closely as, you know, all the 82 mayor and supervisor races in my district. I tend to follow much more closely. But as I understand it and saw it, it was focused on affordability. I mean, it's the same thing I focused my campaigns on, and that's where voters' minds are at, certainly in my district, and sounds like it's the same in the city. So I think a focus on that and can he deliver on it is where voters are, and especially in the face of the other choice that was put before voters in terms of Mr. Cuomo. I will say, though, I think, like, the Democratic Socialist DSA platform, I think folks need to actually go read that platform, because I'm a proud Democrat. There are parts of the DSA platform that I think are just out of line with where voters are. For example, defunding the police, which is explicitly in their platform and not something voters widely support. You know, seizing the means of production and anti-capitalist policy, not something the majority of voters support. You know, rhetoric supporting any violent action, including the phrase globalize the intifada, not something the majority of people support. So while he won the Democratic primary, some of the DSA ideology, I think, is not aligned with the majority of voters, certainly in my district.
So you were with Governor Hochul the other day. Here's a tough one for you. Congressman Lawler or Congresswoman Stefanik, who would be tougher to beat in 2026?
Well, they're both pathetically lockstep behind Trump, so I don't know how much it matters. The entire Republican Party these days just seems to revolve around him and an agenda that's just not serving New Yorkers. It's actually harming New Yorkers. So I don't know how much it matters. Now, if one of them were willing to actually stand up and show some courage and push back against Trump, which we haven't seen meaningfully from either of them yet, then maybe that's a different story. But until that happens, and sadly I don't expect it, I'm not sure it matters.
So I think you have a job that you like, but let's say I could make you GM of the Yankees for one day before the trade deadline.
That sounds pretty good.
What do you do? I mean, the left side of the infield, I know you're a Volpe guy, but we got to start fielding these ground balls at some point.
I know. Last time we talked about Volpe, I have a special attachment having him seen him play for the great Hudson Valley Renegades. But yeah, I think we got to be open to some moves here. I'll leave it at that.
I don't want to pick on him because we all love him, but you know, I've never seen a good team with a bad shortstop. I just don't think that exists.
Well, the bar is obviously high at that position for Yankee fans. But to be clear, hardcore rooting for the Yankees, teaching my boys to love Yankees, Giants, Knicks, Rangers, and Army, of course. So we're still supporting the team.
Well, I appreciate the indoctrination in this one area by you, Congressman Pat Ryan. Pat Ryan is a Democrat representing the 18th House District in New York, and he's been in office since 2022. And I also want to say thank you for showing up here on public media. It's never been more important, and we appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. Hopefully, Ms. Stefanik will finally maybe make an appearance. I think she's the only person who's not been on your all show, which I think says a lot about her unwillingness to be accountable. Sorry for sneaking that one in, but since you asked about her before, maybe she'll finally show up on WAMC.
Yes, as we've said, she does owe a canceled taping from the winter of 2017, and it is an open and standing invitation.
It sounds like an Epstein situation.
Well, you know, we have a long memory here, but as always, the microphones are open to any member who would like to take advantage of the opportunity.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you, Ian.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.